Good evening and welcome to Tribal Theocrat Live. I'm Christian Gray, and it's March 16th, 2013. Great show lined up tonight, part two of a three-part homeschooling series. First was Marxism and statism in homeschooling, and tonight we look at Marxism and pietism in homeschooling. And oh, how I hate pietism. It's wrecked the church. And we'll bring Bobby Lee Swagger on in just a moment. Just a few brief show announcements. A schedule reminder that April 6th, our next show, will be Justin Cottrell. He comes on to discuss the Oklahoma City bombing. He was a firefighter, and he was there on April 19th, 1995, in Oklahoma City, and he'll share his unique perspective on what he saw. And also a quick shout out to our comrade Scott Terry, who's made news this weekend at CPAC in Maryland. His mistake was not in arguing for racial solidarity, but in being white and arguing for racial solidarity. Scott, your fatal flaw is that you're white, my friend. But good job and courageously standing up for your people. Our Lord must win the battle. And tonight, we have Bobby Lee Swagger on the line. Thank you for joining us, Bobby.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Excellent to hear you again. It's been several months, and the show we had first time has been a big favorite from people. We've had some good comments on that. And perhaps the best way to dig in would be for you to give a review or a recap of what you discussed then, as opposed to what you'll be discussing tonight.
Well, absolutely. Last time we spoke, I believe it was in November, we discussed some of the problems in homeschooling, something that's wrong. I started to draw a picture, and tonight my goal was to finish that picture of what's wrong, and then on our third and final installment, go over what I think are some solutions to what's wrong. But to summarize very quickly, since it's been several months, we saw that statism in the curriculum and in the colleges leads to many homeschool graduates being funneled directly into the Republican Party or into, you know, government jobs of some variety. We saw bad theology corrupting the direction of men like Michael Ferris, for example. And so I realized that unless you're completely immersed in homeschooling, like I am, many folks aren't going to see what I'm trying to say. They're going to see that I'm trying to attack homeschooling, or that I'm being too harsh or critical or judgmental. And, you know, especially for homeschooling moms and dads don't get much of a day-to-day homeschooling experience. It's the moms that are caught up in the dishes and the laundry and whatnot. They're the ones who are immersed in the homeschooling culture, and they're the ones that are going to have the hardest time believing what I'm saying. And, you know, a single convention every year, a few conversations with a neighbor lady, 10 moms in your co-op, a couple of blogs you might steal a few minutes to look at. These moms aren't going to see what I'm trying to point out. And I wasn't sure we had covered everything, and I wanted to make sure that we had dug deep enough to see that there is a serious problem here, and there is something seriously wrong with the homeschooling movement. It is destined to failure on the course that it's on. Just like, you know, the problem with government education isn't as simple as they turn out, you know, dumb students, so too the problem with homeschooling isn't they're too patriotic, which I think was the message of my last podcast.
Yeah, and there were some good things you shared back then, especially about the rank military worship that goes on in homeschooling movements and homeschools. Where do you want to start tonight with the problem with Marxism and pietism?
Sure. Well, I think to complete the picture we started, I want to kind of go over what's derailing us, what's neutering the movement, if you will. I think there are three main things that are contributing to it. Firstly are the curriculum we're choosing. Secondly would be the personalities that are leading us. Thirdly would be the colleges. And fourthly, the homeschool conventions. Far and away, though, the first two, the curriculum and the personalities, would be the biggest impactors. How you teach your students and who tells you how to do that are obviously going to be far more important than where they end up after the curriculum, or where, you know, you socialize as a homeschooler, or where you pick out your curriculum, where you get your mountaintop experience, if you will.
So curriculum, personalities, and then the colleges.
Right. The curriculum, I think a lot of folks assume that curriculum is kind of a neutral thing. And to some respect it is. You can make a bad curriculum work if you point out all the errors and go through the effort of tailoring it to your family's worldview. Obviously, I'm coming from a very specific worldview. I kind of laid that out last time. I know many of your listeners will be coming from a similar nuanced worldview. That takes a lot of time and effort. But I think that gives a blank check, basically, to the homeschooling curriculum companies out there, as though, you know, worst case scenario, they're neutral. But most of them are really Christian companies. Most of them really have the best interest of homeschooling at heart. That's not usually the case. In fact, I think the best example of this would be the K-12 curriculum. You might hear it called different things. This is probably, this curriculum of all educational options out there is my very least favorite. You might hear it called Connections Academy. You might hear it called any number of things because it's a government curriculum. I don't think most homeschoolers that use it realize that. This ties back to the pinko-plinko homeschooling, where nobody criticizes anything in homeschooling as long as you're homeschooling. No homeschool mom is ever going to say, no, don't use that science curriculum. It teaches evolution. And no homeschooling mom really wants to say, no, don't use K-12. It has some major flaws. And because nobody really says anything, most folks don't really know. So even the tens of thousands of homeschoolers that are using K-12 have no idea because they've never been cautioned, because this Marxist idea, this egalitarian idea, really, that you can't criticize the curriculum, you can't criticize anything, really, that has won the day. And so you have homeschoolers using this K-12 curriculum. I think it'll be called all these different things because it is a government curriculum, and nobody, they'll attach themselves to a high school. So if your local high school is called, you know, Lincoln High School in Rhode Island, it'll be called Lincoln Academy, Lincoln Connections Academy, Lincoln K-12 Academy, something like that, where it's K-12 content, but they've grandfathered in under the name of the local high school. And that way you get a diploma from the local high school, but you use government curriculum, but you can tell all your friends, I'm homeschooling. And at first you think to yourself, how bad can that be? You're giving them away from the violence and the drugs and the sex ed, and they'll be fine. Just get them home with their parents. But you forget that the average parent was trained by the school system. And so the average parent isn't really a better environment. They're going to watch TV 3-4 hours a day. Mom and dad are, if they're home, they're going to, you know, be on Facebook. Many of them are, you know, spending 4 hours a day on Pinterest. The average homeschooler these days doesn't have a Christian worldview. So they're not passing it on, just pulling them out of the school. So letting families use this K-12 curriculum is unacceptable. And I'll lay out a couple of reasons why I think K-12 is particularly insidious. K-12 was the brainchild of a Jew, actually, named Michael Milken. Michael Milken, if anybody's familiar with junk bonds, knows this is the same Michael Milken who spent 2 years in federal prison for fraud and embezzlement on junk bonds dealing scandals. He has made tens of millions of dollars on his K-12 curriculum. His primary consultant in creating this K-12 curriculum content was none other than the neocon hero William Bennett. I know many, many homeschoolers who carry around his book of morals and his book for homeschoolers as some paradigm of virtue, the things that every child needs to know. William Bennett and Michael Milken made a curriculum that is entirely secular. There is no Christian content whatsoever. It is entirely in compliance with every federal regulation, any state and federal regulation on the separation of church and state. The science curriculum is entirely atheistic. There's no content in any facet of a Bible curriculum. But this curriculum, so it's completely secular content. And technically, you're still enrolled in a government school. So yes, you're allowed to do it at home. And yes, you can add Bible curriculum. And I want to have a Christian worldview too, so we'll buy a Bible curriculum and do it in conjunction with this secular education. Okay, fair enough. The trouble is, when you're still enrolled in a government school, the government school is still allowed to draw federal funds for your child being enrolled in a government school. And let me tell you how the mischievous Jew Michael Milken makes this K-12 curriculum work to his advantage. Not only does he charge, you know, the federal government, you know, your local high school or your local public school, your going rate, you know, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, $14,000. He gets that from the federal government for your students. And in many states like Georgia, you're still required as a homeschooler to pay $800 or $1,000 for it. They have a kind of a lottery system where you might win free curriculum. And in many states, the K-12 is free as an enticement to these families that want to homeschool. They find free curriculum. Their school recommends it when they try to leave the school. And everything looks peachy because no homeschooler ever told them that K-12 is bad. But the sneakiest part of this all is how Michael Milken and their, you know, therefore Bennett, have made this curriculum work for them. Imagine the state of Detroit, or the state of Michigan, and specifically Detroit. You have obviously largely Negro neighborhoods, largely Negro high schools, very poor test scores, very, very high dollars spent per student. So what K-12 does is they locate a school with a zip code and a P.O. box in Detroit. And then they are allowed by federal law to go anywhere in the state of Michigan and pull a student and sign them up from any rural school in any lovely white part of Michigan. And because that school signed up with the school whose zip code is technically in Detroit, Michael Milken has found a way that he will get the maximum dollar amount for the, you know, the Negro neighborhood zip code for the child's way, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles away from Detroit. So in reality, he's getting maximum federal dollars for this ostensibly Christian, white, homeschooling family out in rural Michigan who just wanted an alternative to their bad public school who didn't have a very high academic standard. And then to make it worse, because that average white student in rural Michigan is going to do far better than, you know, the zip code matched Negro student, because they are, quote unquote, so successful compared to their counterparts in that zip code, they get double the funding because their school is a success for Michigan. They've seen, you know, a 30%, 40%, 60% increase in test scores. So the K-12 curriculum, besides its insidious foundation, besides a totally morally bankrupt, content, besides the fact that it's still federally funded, they're actually using it to like get white students' test scores and brains, and yet use the black students' neighborhoods to get maximum federal money. So in every way, this Marxism and homeschooling, this idea that we can't criticize anything, K-12 is the living embodiment of what's wrong with homeschooling. People are oblivious to these facts. They don't understand that K-12's free curriculum isn't free. And they don't understand that a secular worldview completely morally bankrupt. So you might get to do it at home, but you're not turning out a different product. And nobody will tell you that, and you're not allowed to point that out. K-12 is especially insidious in that they like to run their television. Well, now you might even see it advertised in catalogs, newspapers. I know they run most of their television ads in the time slot between like 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. because they figure most moms who are home at that time of day to watch that think to themselves, you know, A, my child's about to get off the bus and tell me all the horrible things they went through today. And I just saw that ad for homeschooling. I'm going to try homeschooling. Let me call that number. Or B, they're thinking, why did I have to come home from work in the middle of the day to watch my child who got kicked out or who was failing a test or who was bullied or who got sick, you know, has health problems, special needs. Why am I home one more day? You know what? He's in there working on that homework that I don't understand. I'll just keep this K-12 people on the phone and see what I can do. In every way, from top to bottom, K-12 has tens and tens of thousands of students, millions and millions and millions of dollars involved. And it's really hard to get a count on how many homeschoolers are using it because they change their names so often as they move to school district. And so we don't really know. Nobody knows. And of course, they won't report. But we're talking a huge percentage of homeschoolers, comparatively to how new they are and how morally bankrupt the system is. Huge percentage are using this K-12 curriculum, this Connections Academy. And nobody is telling them what's wrong with it. And that's a classic case of who's selling us out? Our curriculum company, K-12.
I can't. It's hard for me to imagine that a company with a Jewish founder would be involved in some unethical practices. I just don't believe it.
I know it boggles the mind, but the struggle to get your mind around it.
Well, what about a Becca?
Well, that is the biggest homeschooling company out there. And I think we did touch on the last time. I kind of beat them up pretty roundly for their statism, and there's no denying that outcome. I did want to make one last point. A lot of people come to homeschool conventions and think, I can't afford a homeschool. Look at this. This company is, $900. This company is $700. This company is $1,800. This company you know, for a sixth grade complete set is $700. And they're thinking, I still have to pay my taxes for a free education that I'm not getting anymore. I have to do all the work. Many times I have to quit my job to come home and do this. And now we have to find $800 in the budget, $1,200 in the budget. And I don't think most homeschoolers understand printing those books does not cost that company more than $8 or $9. And they contract out the writing of those to any random, you know, curriculum publishing house they can find. And then if it's a curriculum where it's applicable, they'll insert Christian content. Math, for example, they'll leave basically untouched. History oftentimes has to be, you know, largely reworked. But they don't have an on-staff board of curriculum writers sitting in their building at all. They contract it out to curriculum authors all over the country. So why is Abeka charging $1,200, $1,800 for a single grade level curriculum of rental DVDs that you have to send back to them? You can't even reuse them. Or why are some of these companies charging $400 or $500 for a one-time subscription for one student for 1 year? Why do these textbooks that cost $6 or $8 to print costing $800? It's not just that they're greedy and they're trying to, you know, gouge homeschoolers, not at all. It's because Abeka and Bob Jones and ACE and many of these other curriculum companies, they have Christian schools, you see. And these Christian schools are dying. There's a maxim in the curriculum world that in America, a Christian school closes every day. And I don't know if that's true or not. It's a 5-8-year-old saying, so we may be experiencing a small turnaround. But in general, Christian schools are struggling nationwide. And Abeka is the largest presence in the Christian homeschooling or Christian school world. And so they know that if they put their price so high, and many people have an Abeka Christian school within 30 minutes, 40 minutes, especially in the South, especially in, you know, metro areas. If they price their curriculum right around $1,200 and it costs about $5,000 or $6,000 to put their child in a private school, many times in more rural areas, it'll be down as low as $3,000 or $4,000, just as a desperate to keep kids in the door. They know that many parents would rather pay that extra $1,000 or $2,000 and have a school somewhere teach their child. So Rebecca says, we'll charge $1,200, and hopefully everyone will just pay the extra $1,000, $2,000, put them in a private school. They've never revamped their curriculum to make it homeschool friendly. It's still written by classroom school teachers for a classroom school setting. So it's still very heavy on administrative work. It's still very heavy on grading and record keeping. You'll see that in many curriculum companies. Or it's not written assuming mom's not a teacher. It's written assuming that mom loves this topic, knows all about it, went to college to learn how to teach it. And so these textbooks can be very daunting. When you open them up, I don't know what I'm doing. Tell you what, honey, we spent $1,000 on these books. Let's send them back to Abeka. Let's put them in the Abeka school for $3,000. I don't have to feel inadequate. I don't have to worry about this. It's only $1,500 more. It's only $2,000 more. It's only twice the cost of the curriculum itself. There's a definite intentional price measure that nobody wants to go below, because if you go below, you're shooting all your Christian schools in the leg. And they know that. It's deliberate. It's not that all these homeschool companies are just barely scraping by and they've got such overhead and they're employing all these, you know, scores of homeschoolers to visually write Christian curriculum. So many of these curriculum were written in the 70s, maybe the 80s. Some of these curriculum haven't been updated other than to be have their graphics adjusted in 20 years. And that, on the one hand, it keeps high academic standards. On the other hand, they don't have any input costs. They're charging $1,200 because they want you in their private school. Once they're in your private, you know, they have you in their private school, they know you'll send your child off to their private college. You'll marry somebody at that school. You'll have 3 or 4 kids and start the whole cycle over again, ensuring them business long-term instead of making it easy to get into homeschooling now. Curriculum is prohibitively expensive for many families. Mom may not be able to afford to quit her job either, so it's very intimidating for a non-homeschooling mom to just pop open one of those textbooks and say, oh, I have no idea what I'm doing. I couldn't possibly do this. So I think between K-12 and their whole, you know, government structure, government funding, government content, and then Abeka, with their deliberate funding, deliberate structure. Those are the two biggest names in homeschool curriculum. Bob Jones is equally similar in this respect to the Abeka. Everything I just said about Abeka, I could say about Bob Jones. Those are the two biggest, you know, strictly curriculum, strictly Christian curriculum options out there, and both of them are doing this. So you've got the three top contenders in the homeschooling movement all intentionally not helping homeschooling grow, not making it easier to homeschool. So those two need to be outed pretty solidly. K-12 needs to be completely rejected. Every Christian everywhere who knows anybody using it needs to stand up immediately and say, that's still theft, that's still wrong, and especially if you live in Michigan or anywhere near New York City. Rest assured, if your child is in K-12 and you live within 6 hours or within the same state as a ghetto area, your child is very likely drawing double federal funding for the state you hate so much. So.
Those are some excellent comments about curriculum. What about some comments on the personalities in homeschooling movement, some of these cult-like leaders?
Well, I should say that, I mean, I was homeschooled my entire life. I think I mentioned that last time. All of my friends and acquaintances and church family, everybody was homeschooled. And around 12 years old, as a homeschooled girl, you get introduced to the world of homeschool personalities. These are the people. You get book after book after book after book given to you. Filled. I mean, obviously the front cover has a very feminine 18th century white European woman on the front cover with usually pretty flowy hair and very soft features. And in this book, you pay $27 to hear something around the fourth grade reading level. And then you buy another book for around $20. And you hear the same thing around the fifth grade reading level. And another new pretty picture and another new book. And finally you realize at the end of like book number 9 that they're basically saying, you know, be Proverbs 31. You know, live out your mother. Exemplify women of the past. That's basically what they're saying. That's all they're saying. They're not saying anything more. And after a while, you start to wonder, okay, so are people struggling to learn this on book 1 and 2 or book 9 or book 20? And then you notice that your little brothers and their little friends are reading books that all have little boys with toy swords on the front cover or little boys fighting dragons on the front cover. Or, you know, little boys on the mast of a ship, you know. And after a while, you start to wonder, are boys, did it really take $10, $25 books to teach a little boy how to be a man back in the day? Did it really take 10 books that cost, you know, $20 each to teach a young lady how to act ladylike? Now, I know there's like a dearth of examples. We don't have a lot of living examples. But on the other hand, like, at what point do you finally say, who's publishing all these? And what are they gaining by this? And what are they trying to accomplish? Like, book number 19 on how to be countercultural. Like, I don't want a book on how to be countercultural. Show me how it's done. Or show me places I can apply this. Or just step out of the way. Like, and eventually you start to see the same names come up over and over and over. And I think my favorite to pick on these regards is Bonnie Bauckham.
Oh, yes, Bonnie Bauckham. Before you continue, I hear a scraping noise coming from your end. Is that just the cell phone signal we have, or is that something you're doing?
It's probably my cell phone signal. We've got bad weather on this end. Sorry.
Okay, that's okay. I just noticed it and wanted to see if it sounded like the phone's being scraped up against the wall.
How bad is it? I mean, I can...
No. I think we can make out the content. It's pretty good, but... Just that scraping noise. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't something you were doing inadvertently.
Sorry, I don't have a landline, or I would certainly use it.
Oh, that's okay.
Bad weather.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you can't bad weather, uncontrollable. So back to Bonnie Bauckham.
Yes. She is basically homeschooled magically grow. You see, homeschooling, I think I mentioned this last time, homeschooling has become a code word for white flight for much of the South. They have a serious violent crime problem. They have a low test scores, bad academics, bad teachers, bad moral environment, drugs. The further south you go, it seems, and the more, I should say, the more diverse your classroom becomes, the worse the environment is for, you know, the average evangelical white child. And so many parents in those regions are pulling their children out and homeschooling. And after a while, homeschooling started to get this black eye as being racist. All a bunch of rather well-to-do or comparatively well-to-do white families were homeschooling, pulling all that funding out and leaving the poor school filled with even less money and even more black children with very poor test scores. And so homeschooling had this big black eye for about a decade, where what do we do? What do we do to solve this? And then along came Vadi Bakum. He's probably the only Negro anybody's ever heard of who legitimizes the white race looking up to and venerating Negroes in the homeschooling movement. But I have a few objections. He's kind of a rather large, you know, speaking, books, publishing, audio, you know, even visits to Israel. He's the head of a large and growing chunk of homeschool media. And at first you're thinking, well, here comes one more list of books that every homeschool boy or girl has to read and every homeschool parent has to read. Once more on, you know, faith in the family and what kind of a guy a girl should look for and what kind of a young man, you know, you want your son to be. And after a while you start to realize, why is this man leading us? Why is this magic Negro the one at the head of the homeschooling movement? Why is his group growing? Why is he present at all these conferences? If you look at it, he's not saying anything, and I mean anything, that hasn't already been said before, and probably better, by another white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male. From Jim West on courtship 20 years ago to you name it, it's been said before in a cheap book for less than $12. And is readily available and was probably book number 6 in the stack that you bought your daughter at the homeschool convention. So why is Vadi Bakum so popular? I believe that the modern reformed homeschooler, and I'll say reformed, but he's not technically reformed that I'm aware of, or at least he's reformed Baptist at best. I think they're in love with, like, first of all, someone who gives them an excuse to be, well, hey, we're not all white. You know, Vadi Bakum's black and he homeschools, so therefore it's not white flight anymore. But I think, you know, further than that, deeper than that, reform people shouldn't really fall for that. But I think they're in love with the foreign, the strange, the alien. I honestly believe that if they had to face reality around them, if they had to face the declension in their communities, if they had to acknowledge the problem in their school that caused them to pull out, they'd realize this is really difficult labor they're involved in. I mean, rather than face the chore of changing their own community, changing their church, changing what's going on in their local government, let's just load all the kids into the 15-passenger van and drive 5 hours one way to a homeschooling convention in the middle of nowhere and pay $80 for the whole family to listen to the Magic Negro tell us the same stuff we already know, but stab our consciences about the fact that all of us are sitting here while you know, these other groups and these other races are destroying our school systems. They're destroying our neighborhoods, our parks, our local budget sheets even. You know, the county budgets are out of whack because we've got so many of them, you know, taxing the system's ability to stay afloat. And I think, you know, to be more blunt, I have been, and that's pretty blunt, a lot of his popularity with his husbands and families comes via osmosis from the silliness of the average homeschooling mom. Can Vadi Bakum do some good? Sure he can. Does he say anything that these silly white women should be listening to? No, he just makes them feel better about the fact that they pulled their children out. And I think if he were legitimate, if Vadi Bakum really truly had a heart for this stuff and thought it was a message that he needed to spread, I mean, good on him, good for him. Maybe he needs to write a book in Ebonics and sell it to his group of people. I don't understand what market he's working here because there's already books on every topic and they're in every price range. I mean, if he wants to lead homeschooling and build the church and renew Christian manhood and you know, exemplify and rebuild femininity and reunite the family in worship, that's great. Move to Detroit and help those people do it. In my opinion, his leading any part of these movements tells us just how dead our churches are. We aren't being led by one of our own, but by a foreigner. Meanwhile, I mean, that's our problem. It's not his fault we don't have any leaders coming out of our own. Meanwhile, though, he has an obligation to his own people and the concentric circle God put in him. And he's not fulfilling that. He's derelict in his duty. The day that, you know, a white Christian homeschooling father needs the leadership of a black man, is a day they should be ashamed of. We don't live in a black culture, but in a white European culture. The day that a black man has to teach a white European man how to be a man is a shameful day. And it's the cultural equivalent of the embarrassment a Chinese woman would feel if I had to show her how to make rice. Yeah. Except in this case, there's very large theological implications. When you have a black man leading white men and being manly and being, you know, leading their home, not only is he derelict in his duty to his own brethren, but it's a huge theological disaster on our end.
Robert Fort says that Ebonics is not a written language, it's spoken only. Au contraire, my friend. I think I've read some papers in college from my black friends who who wrote just like they talked.
But I am capable of speaking it, and I'm also capable of writing it, as Robert Fort can attest.
Well, great points about Vadi. Any more comments about Vadi Bakum before we go on to the next cult leader?
Well, I guess I have a couple. I was listening to some lectures of his a couple of years ago, thinking there has to be some content here that's new. He has to be saying something better or, you know, deeper or something that folks are flocking to him like this. And he's openly making racist jokes. Like, you know, white man can't dance or white boy can't dance or talking about, in a very derogatory way, you know, the vanilla and milquetoast look of all the homeschool crowd. And I was just appalled. I was just appalled that his ghetto language was laughed at and smirked at by all the white people in the crowd. You can hear them laughing and chuckling, and he pauses so they have their chance to laugh and clap. And I think it's ridiculous. It's highly insulting. If I'm supposed to respect and venerate him, and I have the disgrace of knowing he's leading my movement, he's leading my people, and what a shameful thing that is. Like, he's going to mock us at the front of the room? We've paid money. We've driven here, you know, 9 miles a gallon in our 15-passenger van. We've come halfway across the state. Dad took the week off work. You know, we got a hotel room all to listen to these great lectures by these godly men. And it's an embarrassment, but we'll take correction from this black man. We'll take it if we have to because we can't find a white man to say it or we already on his foot. And yet he gets up there and he mocks us. And he mocks. It's like they want it. It's like the homeschoolers want to, they have a false guilt complex and they want somebody to throw them under the bus, to throw their history, their heritage. I mean, they've asked for anything they get at this point from them at Vadi Bakum. In my estimation, you know, any Negro who's an elder at that level should be so humble and nearly apologetic that he, you know, he's benefiting from a heritage that's not his own, and he's leading the people that are not his own while he's abandoning the people that are his. I mean, he should call up there humbly, and I just, it blows my mind that folks would pay money to be insulted. I just couldn't fathom it. I think one other thing that I found particularly amusing was he also offers for those with more, a better taste, I could say for myself, he offers tours of the Promised Land. That is the geopolitical nation state of Israel. And for about $3,000, you can travel over there with Vadi Bakum and walk where the Jews walk, I guess. I'm not sure. There's very little, precious little on the tour guides of the land of Jesus or where Jesus Christ walked, what he did there. But it shows he's obviously found out how to milk the white gravy train. And has obviously found out that dispensationalism is where all the money is. Not the dirty, hairy work of fixing Detroit, but the very nice, crisp job of traveling to Israel at $3,000 a ticket with a bunch of aging, white, you know, guilt-ridden, dispensational folks that feel the need to make their journey to Mecca.
I can't imagine how many white people had their pictures taken, you know, with Vadi Bakum at the Holy Wall, the prayer wall, or something.
I am the living embodiment of all this song and everything. Yeah. But anyway, moving on. Yeah, Vadi Bakum, when you look into that, I mean, his daughter now is writing books on, you know, how to be a good daughter. And I mean, literally, I could list you 5 other daughters' books by 5 other men. Just say every chapter by chapter, say nothing new. And it's like, okay, I see how it works. We sold all the books daddy can sell, and now we're going to sell all the books the daughter can sell. And pretty soon, you know, mom will write a book on how to plan your homeschool day, and pretty soon, you know, son will write a book on how to be a courageous boy, and we'll start this whole cycle over again. And they'll mock us from the front of the room, and they'll travel two weeks a year to Israel, and all the way through, you're looking at the death of our movement from one step to the next.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Once you have a good name and combine that with the magic Negro factor, you can just use that brand to write anything and sell books. It doesn't matter what you're saying.
Yeah. Anything that removes concrete reality and puts the homeschooler back into his head, basically, back into some, you know, pietistic thought world of good intentions and pretty pictures and whatever. Just a lack of reality is what it is. And you can sell that. I mean, people want to buy a lack of reality. People want to buy distance from reality. So if you can put a pretty picture on it and you know, do away with our white guilt simultaneously, that's money in the bank right there. That's bling, even.
Bling, bling. Did you have something to say about the folks organizing his tour?
Well, just more the folks behind his tour are, I mentioned his tour to Israel and the $3,000. They are straight up dispensational. And in fact, the actual woman who organizes his tour is herself a Jew. And so you have, it's like, either he doesn't understand the threat, obviously doesn't understand the threat that Judaism poses to everything he loves and sells, or he's deliberately, maliciously doing this. And I think that's a point worth making. He's either an idiot or he's a heretic. And I don't want to call him either one. Everybody can decide for themselves. Maybe he's both. But I think the way he's found to make money would say he's probably not an idiot. So you can draw your own conclusions. But I thought it was worth noting that the woman who organizes his tours is a Jew. And he obviously has no concept of, he's literally lining the pockets of the very person, the very people, the living embodiment of the people that are destroying everything he's trying to rebuild on this side.
And her name is Sherry Fitzsimmons, right?
Fitzsimmons. That's Fitzsimmons with a Z.
Okay. tell me he doesn't use the phrase Judeo-Christian in his books.
Oh, he does. Heavens,
oh,
yes.
No.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yeah. Which is funny, because, like, what is it, like, Judeo-Negro-Christian? Is that African-American Judeo-Christian? Like, how do you even say that? We're into so many, I don't even know. Like, how does he get to tag along is my question. If it's the Judeo-Christian tradition, where does he get in? Like, it's funny. I think he's terrible.
Yeah, I just don't understand how you combine one book that says Jesus Christ is worthy of worship and then the other one, the Talmud, that says he's worthy of boiling and hot excrement. I don't know how you do that and call that Judeo-Christian and say.
Yeah, and then if you add some bongo drums and call it the African American Judeo group, I mean, that gets complex. That doesn't look any theology book I ever read, I'll say that.
I wish I had some bongo music right now. I'd play it. How about our good buddy Doug Phillips and his merchandising business he has going on down there in Texas? Is he Texas or is
he? Yeah, he is. He's in San Antonio. Yep. Our good buddy Doug. Well, it doesn't really fall under the curriculum category, Doug Phillips and his group. His group is out of San Antonio, Texas, and it's called Vision Forum. And they are the quintessential publisher of the books I have thoroughly derided. I think they must have a copyright or a patent on every single photo of every single woman before 1830, just so they can put her picture on their latest and greatest, you know, restating of their same facts. I don't know how they got that copyright, but he's part Jewish, that's probably part of it.
There's not a single page in their catalog where he's not in there, his own picture. He's in every page.
I'm fairly certain it's a photo shoot for him. I am still on their mailing list. I do still get a lot of their stuff. And, you know, my family shows it to me, or I'm looking at it with my family, and it's like, okay, let's turn the page and see how many times he'll be on this page. And, oh, man, he's every page. He's more than his family, more than his children. I don't understand this. But anyway, Vision Forum's goal is big families, biblical manhood, feminine women, submissive wives. They're very solid in those areas, I guess. I mean, I know our entire culture is completely rotten when it comes to those areas, and I know that our culture is debauched. But I don't want just anyone leading us out of there, because just anyone leading us out of there might give us bad solutions. And I would argue that the old dog has given us a very mixed bag when it comes to solutions. This ties into the pietism part of the discussion this evening. Last time we talked a great deal about statism. Pietism comes home to roost when you have that sort of white guilt I mentioned with Bodhi Bakum. By buying Bodhi Bakum's book, by listening to him, you're assuaging that white guilt you've got, and that sticky feeling you get when you drive by a black neighborhood and you lock the windows. But Doug Phillips is not black, he's white, and he's actually part Jewish, and he's quite proud of that. He points that out frequently. Obviously trying to mainstream his message, so it is sensational if you think that's attractive. But here is pietism lived out. And I'm not even going to say he may not intend to, because I'm fairly certain that nobody could be this dense. A few things you could point out in Vision Forum's content is they have a slavish worship of anything the U.S. military ever did or thought about doing, or told us later they didn't do but actually had, or told us they weren't going to do but actually did. World War One, World War Two, his version of victorious manhood apparently has no concept of just war. None whatsoever. If the U.S. military did it, it was acceptable. And if he could get a photo op dressed up like one of those men and he could sell more books for being in the photo op, he would do it. And in fact, has done it. And in fact, that should embarrass a grown man, but apparently it doesn't in his case. But they have no concept of just war. And so many of their books about victorious manhood, their entire manhood collection, has to do with military worship, invading foreign countries, no concept of any of that. I think that's egregiously an error in an age when homeschooling is just basically funneling, fodder into the American military. When these homeschool graduates are, patriotic and love their country and thank God for the blessing of being an American, and then they were taught from their earliest, picture books that a biblical man, was one who fought for his country, even, with no mention of the perversity of those wars or the Jewish financing behind them. None of that is mentioned. And so you line up these students to be cannon fodder. You line up, a perpetuation of the very system that's destroying us. And I think if Doug were honest, he'd have to admit, I can't recycle the same two just wars or one just war over and over and over. And I refuse to touch the controversial one, the American Civil War in the 1860s. So he won't touch that one, anyone he actually could draw out just war theory on. Instead, he repackages every corrupt, military engagement we've ever been in and sells it to these young boys like it's some sort of virtuous manhood defending home and hearth in reality. He's literally sending them to the front lines to die, and he doesn't even seem to realize that. And I think homeschoolers would be wise to be very wary of anybody that convinces them their sons to die for this pagan nation. That's lunacy. But that would be my first main objection to Doug Phillips. The second would be to kind of tag off my first personality would be Bodhi Bakum. Doug Phillips recognize the black eye that all white homeschooling was, and he is largely responsible, he and his group, for promoting Bodhi Bakum into the mainstream item that he is in our homeschooling circles. Bodhi Bakum did him a big favor in saving him from the charge of racism, and now we all have to drive halfway across the country to hear Bodhi Bakum speak, because Doug Phillips is an expert, and Doug, again, does not deal with the idea of consensus responsibility. He does not deal with Detroit. He does not deal with the violent crime in the South. He does not deal with the racial problem that many white families in rural areas down South are dealing with. He tells us all, listen to this guy. He's got something to tell you and a book to sell you. And unfortunately, that's dishonest with him, because it doesn't acknowledge the problem. And now I just spent, $80 more on the same four topics from a black guy, and I had to pay to get insulted from the pulpit. I lump Mr. Phillips in with being responsible for that. And I will note at the end of this podcast, I think I have to send Doug a quarter for every time I used his name, because I'm pretty sure he's copyrighted it by now. But anyway. I think something that any homeschool family, one other thing about the Dunkel movement or Vision Forum that most homeschoolers can relate to is that he espouses this idea of large families. You know, children are a covenant blessing. We have this, well, he doesn't say covenant blessing, but I would. But he, you know, he talks about having a large family as a blessing from the Lord, and that's great. The trouble is, I don't know how you can have a submissive stay-at-home wife and a large homeschooling family and ever begin to afford any of the items in Doug Phillips' catalog. It's
Thank
like
you.
He lives on another planet. Like, I don't know what, I don't know, like, I have literally seen things in his catalog for, you know, $14 that you can drive to any store, you know, any Walgreens would sell these things for $4.
It's incredible markup, but it reminds me of that line by Mel Brooks in Spaceballs, merchandising.
I don't own a television, but I'll take your word on that. Yeah, it's like he somehow thinks that because we're like-minded, we have some obligation to let ourselves be fleeced by him. And I take that personally. I find that offensive. It's my duty and my privilege and my pleasure to find the best deal possible. And it's like I'm supposed to feel some sort of allegiance to him that I should set that at the door when I open his catalog, but it literally burns my eyes, I think, to see the prices he charges. I don't know how anybody in their right mind, with Dad working one job, could ever afford to buy any of the things Doug Phillips has to sell. And I think he's playing on people's, you know, allegiances, their false sense of, oh, I gotta help these people. They're good people. They're trying to do good things. I'll pay $39 for a toy wooden sword that I could cut out with a jigsaw in the garage in 10 minutes. You know, like, it's lunacy. And I think that's either dishonest or he just knows how foolish his market can be. But, tying into that, another thing that could be said about his merchandising, as you said, his version of victorious manhood that he's incessantly talking about, men of honor, men of character, men of, you know, character, however he wants to phrase it. To turn out that kind of a student, obviously, or that kind of a child, that kind of a son, would cost half a mint if you were buying it directly from Doug, if you used his toys and his books. But more importantly, even if you could afford it because, you know, you were a government employee yourself, you know, to therefore afford it because you've gone to Rebecca and got a degree from there and worked for the Republican Party. But if you could afford all of his things and you raised your son that way, we've seen now, after a generation of Vision Forum having its strong influence on the homeschooling movement, that the products they're turning out are completely impotent. They have no salt to them. They're just weak and they're effeminate. And you think to yourself, why are we really pushing this manhood thing? But we keep turning out these really rather pathetic young men. And I'm not saying that with any specific examples in mind. I think you can look across the room at a homeschool convention and see exactly what I'm talking about. It's khaki pants and a plaid shirt and a clip-on tie. And, you know, he's got his head down and he's 17 years old, 18 years old. There's not a callus on his hand. He's probably never worked outdoors for more than 6 hours in his whole life. And he's playing dueling swords with a bunch of other 17-year-old young men. And that's the trouble. They are young men. They have this idea of immersing boys in the past. You know, everything 150 years ago, all those unjust wars we were in, even, you know, as recently as 70 years ago, that was manhood. So you need to immerse yourself in that. So we're going to sell you a fake sword. We're going to sell you a coonskin cap. We're going to sell you another book about how men in the past were manly. And the reality, we're not going to tell you how to do that, and we're not going to show you how to do that. We're just going to keep charging you to keep doing that. We're not going to tell your dad how to show you how to do that either. But that's the trouble. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. We're not facing dragons. We're facing drones. And we're not facing, you know, an ancient invading horde. We're facing Negro violence in our communities. We're facing Mexican drug problems in our communities. We're facing, you know, it's not safe for young white women to walk the streets after dark in large portions of the country anymore. We're facing, you know, demographic annihilation in parts of the country. We're facing the fact that our American electoral system does not work anymore because they're all outvoting us. even though we're the ones paying for everything. These are the things we're facing. We aren't facing Yankees. We're facing a Judaic court system. And if he would like acknowledge the real threats and teach these young men, leave the toy sword behind at 10 years old. Leave the coonskin cap in the toy box and come join the men on the front lines of being men. And I think he knows intuitively, he must know. Maybe he doesn't. I've obviously never spoken to him. But, like, he must know that when you call people to do that, there's a direct, immediate cost that's necessary to be paid. And if you call people to pay that price, they certainly won't have money to buy anything from Doug Phillips. And more importantly, they'll be very unpopular. They won't be in pretty pictures in the front cover of books. They won't, you know, have an extra $2,000 a year to send to Doug Phillips. They won't have money to drive all the way to the convention and be insulted by a new girl. He may know that, or he might still live in La La Land himself and think that showing young men all the way through adulthood pictures of other young men in the past that used to be men will somehow turn them into men. Maybe he's that deluded, but I don't believe so. I believe he knows that if he called young men to leave childish things behind and become a man and view the world as a man, he would lose a great deal of funding because those men would be incapable of supporting him and adoring him to the extent that they have. We have a whole generation, now my generation, I'm ashamed to admit that my generation and the young men of the last, probably my age and about 10 years younger, I would consider them largely a total loss. I know of less than 10 across the entire country that I would be proud to say, look at that. He's an example of homeschooling. He's a strong young man. But I could tell you dozens, probably hundreds of young men that are excellent Renaissance reenactors or that are the cream of the crop when it comes to, you know, English country dancing or to any variety of, you know, Civil War reenacting even. These young men are so stuck in the past. My generation is so stuck in the past and you know, adoring the things of 200 years ago that they're completely useless today. They have no concept of tactics. They have no concept of how to engage the forces we're looking at. They have no concept of, like, hey, I have a conviction and nobody else shares it. How do I convey that to people? How do I bring it to bear on my community? How do I live it out in my life? Not just applying it to me and my family personally. How do I make other people see it? And how do I make it like the law of my county or the law of my state? No, it's not easy to do that. It's not easy to train young men to do that, especially when most people don't have fathers that are doing that. It's a lot easier to be a pietistic sort of a person and disappear into your head and drift off into Renaissance reenacting where all your spare money that you have left after Doug has been in your pockets is spent on a reenacting costume and English country dancing lessons and driving to and from these lessons of all these homeschool groups, you know, homeschool theater, recitals, music, all that, great. We'll use all those things and reclaim all those things when our enemies aren't standing in our homes, in our communities, in our towns, when they're not owning our banks, when they don't run our schools, when they don't, you know, control every penny and every moment of our lives. Doug, wake up. Bring these kids, bring these young men specifically out of your ridiculous, you know, victorious manhood dream and into reality and teach them how to be men. And I think that if any homeschooler with sons over the age of 9 would sit down and look at what's happening and look at what I just said and compare the crowd they saw at the homeschool convention last year and compare the young men in their mind from their church or their homeschool group, there has to be, they would have to have some truth ring out to them because it's a systemic problem and it doesn't seem to have a solution if he won't own up to it and if they won't abandon him and that pietistic escapism.
Very good. So part Jew, merchandiser, and lawyer. Not a good combination. You know, I wonder with all the gun grabbing going on, if he's considered an FFL license so he can sell AR-15s for $10,000.
Tell you what, he'll get an FFL license and charge you $10,000, but I'll send you a cardboard one. That way you can just get some practice. And they said orange tippers on there. Every part of the law, anyway.
Yeah. He'll send you the electronic file for the 3D printing of a magazine or something.
Exactly. of small ammo included.
Well, not too far from. Well, let's leave Dougie in the dust here. Let's talk about another guy. Not too far from where I live is a creation museum, and that's run by Ken Ham. What can you tell us about Mr. Ham?
Well, Ken is not nearly the leader in pietism that Doug Phillips is, or Doug Phillips' followers are. Ken Ham has actually done a few things in the last year or two to do he and his group proud. He took a few stands in the homeschooling circuit. In 2011, in March, he was speaking at a homeschool convention. I don't remember where at the moment. I wasn't there, so I didn't recall. But it was quite a scandal because he was speaking, and he openly renounced another homeschool curriculum that was for sale there at the event, as it was basically the curriculum he was opposing was making an open synthesis between the creation story in the Bible and, you know, basically theistic evolution, or it was helping homeschool students realize that we can find common ground with all these atheists and all these evolutionary textbooks, and you could see that God meant it this way, and maybe that passage was, you know, an allegory or something like that. Ken Ham, in his lecture at his allotted time slot, spoke up and said, that's not the case, that's a lie, they are deceiving you, if that's the case, if they're correct, then throw your Bible away and walk out. Now, he didn't quite say it to my knowledge, he didn't quite say it that extreme, but he did strongly caution by name against this other curriculum and tell the family why it was incorrect. Because of that, he was removed from that particular homeschooling convention circuit for the rest of the year. They sent him a letter, and you can read this online. They sent him a letter telling him that he wasn't welcome at any of the future events he was booked for. So on the one hand, I have to give him credit for not being that quintessential, you know, anything goes in homeschooling as long as you homeschool, that Tinko Plinko homeschooler. He didn't stand there like he could have and said, well, I know other people have other views, and I think the Bible very clearly says this. He knows he's in a Bible-saturated audience. He knows that most people sitting there would reject evolution if they heard it and are looking for a creation-based curriculum still when they come to homeschooling. So he would have been safe to play that card, and nobody would have really called him out on it because he's in safe territory. But he didn't, and he paid a price for it. He did lose many of his conventions for the rest of the year. I forgot to mention this. He hooked up with Bonnie Bauckham. Bonnie Bauckham is affiliated with another homeschooling convention circuit. He's part of it. He's part of the founder of it. And so he hooked up on that homeschool convention, still got to many of the same events. I know, like in Tennessee, for example, they hold their conventions simultaneously just in different cities, different parts of the city. So, like around Nashville. So he did pay a price for not saying that everything is equivalent. He did have a friendly audience that would have let him. But obviously that's his one trick pony. So he really does need to stand on that. And he did. And that's to his credit. On the other hand, he's also, on the very forefront of advancing a Marxist view of race. And he's gone out of his way for some time, for some unknown reason, to make sure that everybody associates Ken Ham and creationism with multiculturalism. When you see a massive uptick in the number of homeschool families adopting interracially, you can thank Ken Ham, basically. He began this mantra years ago of there's only one race, the human race. And, I mean, people have been saying that, obviously, in Marxist circles for a long time, but they weren't saying it in homeschooling circles until Ken Ham started saying it. And his elementary level explanations of the genetic components of race he dumps them down into bite-sized pieces for homeschoolers who then repeat them and repeat them and repeat them and repeat them. So you look around the homeschooling crowd and you can basically see everyone muttering under their breath, there's only one race, the human race, while they drag around their family of, you know, a couple of Asian children or three or four or five Haitian children, along with their own biological children. And that's Ken Ham. That's his doing. If he were honest and would see that, you know, he's basically telling the Marxist line, he would be just as bold in renouncing his previous works on this as he was in renouncing that other competitor of his, you know, selling a compromised curriculum. He's compromised on this issue. His view on this is destroying families across the country as they take in these races that are not God ordained to be part of these families. And he doesn't own up to that. And I think that's not so much pietism so much as multiculturalism, but it is a strong presence. He is leading part of the movement. And now that he's stood up and took a stand, a lot of people think, well, he's rock solid. He's got courage. He's got guts. He stood up when it mattered. Now we can believe everything he says. And that's the problem.
Mickey Henry just dropped a link in the chat room to a series by Tom Hengist that refutes Ken Ham's views of race. And I recommend people to go to firstword.us.
Yeah, that's really helpful for anybody to take a look at that.
Yeah. I think there are two or three articles there, maybe even four, I'm not sure, but it's a complete pile drive to the face of Ken Ham. So good job, Tom. What about the HSLDA? We've talked about them in the last broadcast, and you shared some interesting things about them and their founder.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, there's obviously a lot of money. Doug Phillips has found a great deal of money. Ronnie Bachman has found a great deal of money. The Creation Museum has found that it's even financially beneficial to be open 7 days a week. Ken Ham. But one thing I did want to mention last time, I mentioned Dad's Theology and Michael Ferris not having an eschatology of victory. I think it's important to note that the HSLDA has board members that are very high up in Wells Fargo Banking, vice presidents of Wells Fargo Banking, for example. There is deep money here. We're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars in the homeschooling market alone. But then when you look at the eschatological implications on our foreign policy, again, deep wealth of money being thrown around here. It's not just your child's, education, which is important enough. It's not just your child's, development and maturation as a Christian and young men of virtue. We're talking the financial sellout of our entire movement being done by the very people leading the movement. And for the last homeschool mom who thinks that I'm too harsh or I'm too critical or I don't love it enough, these things need serious consideration. These things, it's not a coincidence that all these things are working against homeschooling simultaneously. It's not a coincidence that we don't have a generation to point to of success. It's not a coincidence that K-12 is free in 37 some states, across the country. It doesn't happen accidentally that people like Ken Ham take a stand on one issue and sit down and toe a whole different line on another issue. They don't do this accidentally. Nothing happens accidentally in politics or when millions of dollars are involved. And in homeschooling, not just the $150 you spend on science curriculum every year. We're talking tens of millions of dollars in the sway on what these folks do with their money. So I think that needs to be pointed out. Folks like to think, no, I talked to the nice lady at the booth, or I got the pretty catalog with a goat's pretty face in it. All of that's irrelevant. If you dig deeper, who's funding this? Who benefits? If you ask, what do they benefit if I believe this at face value? If you ask yourself that over and over, you'll consistently see there's something fundamentally rotten here.
Yeah, I recall after our last broadcast we did, Bobby, on this subject, you mentioned so many good things about HSLDA that I quickly went to unsubscribe to their email list. And I tell you have to have a computer science degree to unsubscribe to that thing. You have to check this box, check that box, put your email in, confirm it. Most people have a one-click unsubscribe. It's difficult to get off their mailing list, I thought.
Well, one thing, if you still continue to get those, keep in mind that many of these groups have subgroups, if you will. They have their state at this HSLDA group, and they have their HSLDA PAC, and they have their HSLDA federal, group where they're trying to pass their parenthood amendment. Then they have, basically, for every server that company owns, you're going to have to unsubscribe that many times. And so if it's six or seven times before you finally get out of the maze, don't be surprised. They don't want your name shared from their list. They don't want your name, off the fundraising. That would go for just about anybody. And that goes for, homeschool companies will send you their catalog for homeschooling and then for their college and then for their elementary program and then for their, then for their electives. And then, you call in to get off the catalog list, you better call in 10 times because they're not going to let go of your name. They know your cash in the pocket. They just need to ask you for it. And in the HSLDA's case, they just need to scare you for it. And that's what they're going to do.
Very good. This is Tribal Theocrat Live. We're talking with Bobby Lee Swagger on Marxism and Pietism and homeschooling. What about some bad trends you see in the colleges, Bobby?
Well, this could be an entire podcast on its own, but I I don't see it being, I think it's more, the weaknesses we see in the Christian college realm are directly what basically the homeschool graduates have asked for. So I think, you know, for the purposes of this podcast, the symptoms that we're looking at, statism last time, pietism this time, the colleges reflect that. And so it's kind of a symptom of the problem we're addressing. So I don't have nearly as much to lay at their feet. So I'm not going to go into that nearly as depth. But I did just want to point out, you do definitely see the effects of what I've talked about when you look at these college campuses. When you look at Pensacola Christian College, when you look at Liberty University, Bob Jones University, to a smaller extent, Hillsdale, Bryan College, Grove City, the Reform Colleges, Dort, Northwestern, Covenant, Calvin College, all of these schools, you see the final product of homeschooling. And if you ever want to know, where's our generation going? Where are these homeschoolers ending up? How are they changing the world? Look to those colleges and see what they're turning out, because those are the, specifically colleges designed at these graduates. They're the ones that will have the most lenient acceptance policies as far as homeschool diplomas, or if they take a homeschool diploma. They know they're gathering in all the homeschoolers. And then if you look at what they turn out, you'll see what happened to the homeschoolers. From, immersion in K-12 curriculum and victorious non-manhood into Liberty University, you see at the end of 22 years, a debt-ridden, multiculturalized, effeminate young man. If I had a dime for every offensive multicultural rap music video that came out of Liberty University in the last 10 years, I could probably afford to attend Liberty University. Now, the old Jerry Falwell would be embarrassed by what this new Liberty University is turning out. In his drive to get 30,000 students, he got 30,000 students. The trouble is, he was willing to accept all these poor homeschool graduates, and I don't mean poor in an academic sense. I mean the result of this poor environment. Instead of raising the bar, he took them all in. Oh, sure, that's fine. Send them on over. Send in all your mixed bag of bad worldview, bad eschatology, fake manhood. Send them to me. I'll finish the multiculturalism job or my college role now that I'm gone, and we'll turn out into the world, latte drinking, loafer wearing, sweater, really bad facial hair, young men that have no concept of making any difference. And many of these are Marian colleges. They go there to find, a young woman who finds those things attractive, and they get married and they continue the debt cycle. Now, very few of these colleges that I mentioned, I think Grove City, Hillsdale, I'm not sure about Bryan College, but most of the rest of them will take some form of federal aid. And so they're perpetuating again that debt system that's strangling us. They're not acknowledging it to be stolen federal money. They're not acknowledging the ridiculously inflated prices of these colleges are completely unnecessary, especially if we're trying to take all the homeschoolers in that, their parents have sacrificed all these years. And if we're trying to take them and bless their parents for that faithfulness by finishing the job for them and stewarding their money and turning out warriors and turning out successful people. Would we really want to charge them so much that the first 10, 15, 20 years of their lives would be in debt slavery to the college that finished the job for them? Like, is that really? No, those colleges do not need to be charging that. They should repudiate this debt system and the federal aid. They should cut the length of these programs so they're not charging. Much of this stuff could be learned in a fraction of the time. If you weren't sitting there on campus being in forced chapel, in forced multicultural, love fest, cut the class time, cut the price on all your courses, stop taking federal aid, fix the mistakes of parents that have chosen bad curriculum like K-12 or Rebecca or Bob Jones or whatever, and do us proud with the money we're sending you, or at least, do old Jerry Falwell proud and reject this effeminate multicultural mess that we're turning out. But it's appalling. The college is just a great disappointment, definitely.
Yeah, they are pretty disappointing. I dropped a link in the chat room, by the way, to a good book that has a critique in it of Jerry Falwell's Moral Majority. And that was from Gary North's old publication. I think of the name of it now, but I think it was the Christians and Civilization series that came out from his group back in the 80s. Good stuff. Well, how about anything else on colleges before we go on?
Not really. Again, that would probably be either a whole other podcast, or we'll just chalk it up to being another symptom of the problem. And another group of people benefiting financially from the homeschool movement to a huge extent, but being unwilling to point out problems. Unwilling, you know, their greed for all this federal money and their greed for $30,000 a year per student, you know, literally shuts their mouth when it comes to being honest with what's going on, the problems they're facing, you know, the poor products they're turning out. They just put a new glossy multicultural magazine out every fall and build more families. Yeah. They should be repudiated for that. Homeschool families should give a very, very long and careful look at whether or not that's a path they want their child on, whether or not that's a multicultural environment they want their child in, even if they have a strong faith. Why would you waste four years and all that money and debt to have this college, you know, shove that down their throat for a while? It would do nothing but frustrate them if they were strong in their beliefs, and it would very likely undo any work you had done if they were weak in their beliefs.
Yes.
So I think the colleges need to be very fairly looked at, but again, I think there's plenty of content for a whole other podcast on that end.
I think I might have accidentally said Bob Jones's moral majority. I meant Jerry Falwell. Let's talk about something I've never been to, and that is homeschooling conventions. I've never been to one, but you have.
And you're not a homeschooler. No.
Tell me about those.
Well, homeschooling conventions are the social event of the year for many homeschoolers. I've been to dozens and dozens myself. All over the country, they're largely the same. They're put on by three main groups, Great Homeschool Conventions, Teach Them Diligently, and I believe it's the America Homeschool Convention Association. These events are moneymakers. And I think there are a lot of work, obviously, planning any large event is a lot of work. But they're not put on so that homeschooling can grow. And they're not put on so that you know, we can all have a good fellowship and pack a picnic lunch and hang out in the foyer and chat with other homeschooling moms. This is strictly, I mean, other than the curriculum itself, which I've explained how there's a great deal of excessive money there, and other than the book tours, the only money in homeschooling is on the speaking circuit, and that's where all these personalities get their name out there. They, you know, insult people from the pulpit if they are African American. But that's where the money is. Homeschool conventions. You pay $70. You pay $120. In some states, you pay $150 a couple and your kids are extra. Some of the homeschool conventions will literally ask you to leave your children home because, you know, the event is small or they want mom to have a break or some other sensible reason. You pay $70, $100, $200 to get in. You pay, $6 a CD to listen to these lectures, when you get home. And you buy these $25, $30 books. You buy all your curriculum there at a discount of some kind. But all the vendors are paying through the nose to be there. They're paying through the nose to fly their people there and ship all their curriculum there. And everybody walking around is paying through the nose to be there. This is where new homeschoolers are made. I'm certainly not against the homeschool convention folks making money. But it's this very first moment. This moment is when homeschoolers are made. It's not, oh, I'm a Christian homeschooler, I'm a Christian mom, I've got three kids, my heart is really to be at home with them and to teach them after Christ. 99 times out of 100, it's, my son's getting bullied at school, I know somebody who homeschools, so I'm going to drag my husband along to this homeschool convention, and we're going to consider homeschooling. We're going to pay $80 to get in the door, we're going to spend $200 on audio lectures we don't have time to listen to, we're going to get mocked by Roddy Bauckham. And then we're going to go order $2,000 worth of epic curriculum because it's the best of the best of the best. And we're at no point in anywhere in here is anyone doing any of the things I mentioned before, pointing out the problem with the K-12 boost at the end of the row, pointing out that all these homeschool families walking around with, you know, interracial adoptions going on are not normal, pointing out that, you know, if you go over to that book table over there and all those books that look virtually identical, they are virtually identical. So you only need to buy one of them and you'll be fine. Like, nobody points any of that out to them. So you start homeschoolers right away off in this pietistic la-la land of, A, I'm going to spend a lot of money to homeschool. the homeschooling looks like this lady on the front cover of this catalog, or these young men dueling with fake swords, even though they're old enough to drive. Like, you get this false impression from the very get-go about what homeschooling is, what it looks like, and what you're trying to accomplish. And there is a great deal, I should mention this, there's a great deal of corporate funding in all of this. I heard recently from a friend that the homeschooling convention in Michigan was going to be sponsoring, or part of their lecture circuit would include their leader cast. That is where Chick-fil-A, obviously a Christian company, has something you can rent from them, basically. It's called a leader cast, and they give you live audio, well, not live, but it's a pre-recorded audio feedback of these famous people in America, leadership experts, you know, time management experts and efficiency experts, talking about how to be successful, how to manage your time, how to be, that's all fine and great. You've got a major multi-million dollar corporation investing itself in a homeschool convention, and you think to yourself, wow, you've got a bunch of wishy-washy evangelicals who are forming their opinions about homeschooling in this very moment, this crucible event, this two-day weekend where dad's being dragged around, you know, trying to guard his pocket from the Doug Phillips people. And, you know, the kids are kind of going, oh, you know, we could homeschool. And mom is wide-eyed and terrified. And then they go, oh, you know, Chick-fil-A took that stand. Let's go listen to what they have to say. And they drag you in to listen to the most ridiculously, it's just lunacy, the speakers they want these homeschool folks to listen to. None of them are remotely Christian. None of them claim to be remotely Christian. None of whom I would wager care anything whatsoever about homeschooling at all. Their parents, the children, education, or even Christianity. This is sheer lunacy. We've got, you know, Jack Welch is there. We've got the former chairman and CEO of General Electric, for pity's sake. And anyone who can even Google that, but anyone who knows anything about Jack Welch knows exactly how corrupt he and General Electric were, and that whole mess they created. We also have, you know, former Navy SEALs, basketball coaches, people that no homeschool child should look up to as a hero, per se. I mean, we know what's wrong with the American military system. We know what's wrong with a culture that worships sports. We know that I believe they even drug in Condoleezza Rice. Like, for pity's sake, are we going to bow down and worship the idols of our age at a homeschooling convention? I mean, are we really going to stand here and literally throw all of our principles out the door while we're still standing in the building? I mean, I can see getting tired of homeschooling. I can see breaking down and getting K-12 because your family is completely destitute. I can see, you know, falling for some of this stuff after years and years of homeschooling, you're worn out and exhausted. But while we're still there forming people's opinions on homeschooling and making new homeschoolers by the moment, we're gonna worship the sports figures, the leadership figures, the female Negro Secretary of State. Really? Like, that's appalling. The homeschooling folks at Michigan, you know, whatever their homeschool group is called, they need to be thoroughly embarrassed for that. And I mean publicly embarrassed. And I could give you 15 ways that can be accomplished, but that's a shame right there. There's no place for anything like that. From what I've heard, Chick-fil-A has attempted to get that contract with a similar contract with other homeschool conventions, but everybody's kind of keeping their eye on Michigan to see how that works and to see if that's a solid response to homeschoolers. And it's not an accident that they're creating homeschoolers into that type of homeschooler. They're setting people up to be state worshiping. You know, if they're not pietists, they're state worshiping, and either way, they're going to be failures in being that salt and light we're looking for. It's not a question of, and I know, you know, my first reaction after, you know, having been homeschooled, I have a great deal of loyalty to this, and I mentioned my family was involved in the court struggle in our case in our state. I have a great deal of loyalty to this. I'm passionate about it. And at first you think, all these people must just not get it. They must just not realize what they're doing. But again, this is not an accident. These things don't happen accidentally. This is planned. This is deliberate. It's an effort to drive homeschooling into the mainstream. And the trouble with being mainstream is, in a pagan culture, in a pagan society, with a dead church, being mainstream means being pagan and dead. And that's the trouble, is this push is from the inside. It's not, I mean, it's not like Condoleezza Rice demanded access to brainwash all of our kids at every homeschooling convention. It's not like, you know, K-12 has a legal mandate that if you can't homeschool unless you use K-12. It's, and that's how they're getting so much traction in homeschooling. These people are being put in front of us. Doug Phillips, you know, he doesn't force anyone to buy his book. They're being put in front of us as the only options we have by the people leading our movement. And many people in our circles tend to be, I would say, more health conscious, if you will. They understand that the same corporations that are running many of our banking industries and many of our the agricultural system, they saw the same thing happen with the organic movement. Anyone who's watched both of these movements, the homeschooling movement and the organic movement, can see, and there's others. I mean, there's many others, but I'll just use those two. This is a clear pattern. They let dedicated, passionate, strong people start a movement, pay a price, suffer something, lose friends, lose acquaintances, lose a church, lose a house, lose a job, lose a career, lose future options in down the road by not having a high school diploma. They let a few dedicated diehards, you know, refuse Monsanto seeds or refuse herbicide or pesticides. They let a few diehard families stand alone at a farmer's market week after week after week, and nobody's buying anything, and they're losing money hand over fist, and they're getting mocked by all their neighbors, and they're being kicked out of all the farmers' co-ops. And they let a few people pay the price. And then once there's money involved, once we can push it from the mainstream, we can push it mainstream, push it from the inside, then you dump in multinational corporations, multi-billion dollar industries into the organic movement, and we're seeing that now in homeschooling. People don't realize it, and they never realized it with the organic movement until those few passionate people were either dead or completely disillusioned and embittered and had pulled away from what they had built and washed their hands of it and said, forget it, I'm going home to my family, I'm going home to raise my own chickens and my own garden, or in many people's case, I'm going home to homeschool my own kids, and I'll just make those three or four or five different. I can't fix this anymore. So the passionate few are exhausted and silenced, either by their exhaustion or by, you know, multi-billion dollar contracts that force them to be quiet. In the case of the organic movement, nobody's yet paid me to be quiet on the homeschooling movement, so I'm not done yet. But I am done, so, you know, anybody can meet me in the office. But my point here is, this is coming from the inside. The enemy is not your government school. That's so obvious that it doesn't need to be stated, at least not to you and your listeners. The HSLBA is the enemy. ABECA is the enemy. K-12 is the enemy. The state homeschooling groups that would allow this Chick-fil-A leader cast into their convention are the enemy. The conservative family value Republicans are the enemy. It is not, you know, the local thug down in your government school. Everyone knows they're the enemy. That's so obvious. The trouble is, we're not their enemy. Because we've let our movement be co-opted by these many different forces and these many different ideologies, we aren't a threat to anybody. We're not even a threat. I mean, the greatest threat we can be is to each other in our churches and our homeschooling groups when we get offended over one family's children behavior or another family's, you know, do we do psalmody or hymns or head coverings or not? Or that's all fine and good. That's the strongest battle most of us ever get into. We're not a threat to our government schools. We're not a threat to the educational elites that, you know, have lowered the bar so far. We don't blow their standards out of the water. Our kids don't change the world. We're useless. We've cut our own feet off beneath us by letting all these forces go unchecked and unpointed out and unnoticed. And so we've got a whole generation or two now of kids that graduated from homeschooling or are homeschooling, and they have no clue who they're up against, who the enemy is, or how to fight them. And this leads to, I mean, it's a natural consequence of sin, obviously, but men are looking to escape their responsibilities. Women are looking to escape and need to submit. If men can use bad eschatology and terrible hermeneutics to justify cowardice, they will. And if they can't hide behind eschatology, they're going to hide behind pietism. And you might be thinking, I don't know any moms in my homeschool group that struggle with pietism. I mean, but think harder. Look around. Do you know any middle-aged white men with a beard in a cheap suit and a 15-passenger van and 8 or 9 kids and wide-eyed smarmy daughters and sons who are 14 or 16 or 18 years old and who still hold hands with their dad. You see these kids who shy away from the sodomites at the grocery store. Young ladies who are so sheltered from reality that they really believe that life is about, you know, silly skirts and hair bows and baking cookies and being sweet and serving their covenant head. That's all fine and good. But we've got young men who have no direction or application for this biblical manhood other than that they need to provide for their big family, you know, buy things from Vision Forum. And they need to end up in some government job of some kind or in the Republican Party, propping up the system that's destroying them. You see those all over the place at homeschool conventions. You see young men who are eager to argue about, you know, maybe the Civil War, but more likely they're eager to reenact World War I or World War II, but they have no concept of just war theory or how to apply it. All these people gather at these churches. And I don't care what denomination or even what, you know, sociological background they're coming from. You have churches where these men get together for coffee or Bible study or fellowship or men's group 5 nights a week. And they have to cast one spine around and share it because they can all get their 1 minute then to talk about the latest discovery they found. One more Bible verse that talks about Christian charity and Christian unity and Christian love. Like one more Bible verse that spoke to them this week about how all the Bible points us to Christ in heaven. One more, if I had a dime for every well-intentioned man who believed that the total depth of his duty for God was to, you know, love his wife, love his kids, and think about Jesus in heaven. Like, yes, but no. Like, thinking about Jesus in heaven, sure. I mean, it's not all spiritual. You've lost the practical, salty, dirty, hard, earthly aspect of everything. You've lost all the application of God's law. Instead, you have a smarmy, huggy, emotional sort of religion, or you get all intellectual. You read, you know, everything Brooks ever wrote. You read everything a Puritan ever said. You read it all over and over and over. And you post about it on your blog. And you Facebook about it. And you argue on Facebook for hours and hours and hours about nuances of your particular denominational views. Meanwhile, you're so tied up in this spiritualized faith or, you know, intellectualized faith that your children are being eaten up by all these forces in the movement you put them in to protect them from everything going on around you. They're not changing the world. These dads have big hearts, I'm sure. They're doing the best they can given the leadership they have. Sure, these women don't realize that they're running their families or their homes. Maybe not. But pietism is gutting the homeschool movement. It has gutted the church. You know pietists. Everybody knows a pietist.
Yep.
You might even be a pietist. You might see now that it's crippling the church around you. You might even see that it's crippling your family, your extended family, your relatives, most of the homeschoolers you know. And that's it has to be addressed. It has to be addressed. You can only address this with an application of God's law.
Yeah.
And there are sources for that. I mean, it's not like there's no, we don't know what to do. But it has to be addressed. And people, it's awkward. It's uncomfortable. We're going to lose friends. We're going to lose family. We're going to lose money, certainly. We're going to lose that warm, fuzzy feeling at homeschool convention. But pietism is killing us, and it must be addressed.
Hey, amen. This is pietism. It's subtle, but it's a poison, and we have to make the distinction to some people who don't understand what we're saying is piety is good. That's devotion to God, but pietism is this inordinate attention to the experiential and devotional aspects of Christianity at the expense of transforming culture, of calling out and fighting our enemies, and you've made some excellent points. Thank you so much. What do we do then? How do we go forward?
Well, I do hope to lay out a picture in our next podcast of very practical day-to-day things you can do very differently. But just as an overview, the most important thing you can do is actually do anything. I mean, and I know that it sounds overly simplistic, but a lot of people read these books, hear these lectures, and, you know, half-heartedly implement one or two things. We have a major problem. We need solutions, and they actually need to be done. You need to literally stop going to the homeschool convention if that's what it takes. One thing I would suggest is that you call the leaders of your local group, your state homeschooling group. Call them. And this goes for any group. If you see this sort of compromise in the pro-life groups in your area, in the pro-gun groups, in the pro-family, pro-marriage, pro-homeschooling, if you see these groups that you give time or money to or that you're affiliated with in any way, if you see this pietism, if you see this multiculturalism, then you need to call them and tell them to clean their board of anybody who isn't post-millennial. And this is step one. If we're playing to lose, they can do us a favor, lose faster, and get lost. If they happen to not be dispensational but amillennial in their outlook, and they see our earthly duty as nothing more than a suffering trip until spiritual victory in heaven, go ahead and suffer and get chased right off the board. We don't need you here. We don't want you here. You can leave now. Consider this your final suffering at the hands of these, you know, horrible postmillennial people. It's absolutely essential that the people leading us have a vision of victory. If they can't see us defeating the enemy, if they don't see the enemy as the enemy, if they don't see how to defeat the enemy that they pretend isn't there, they have no business whatsoever leading us. Make that very clear to these groups. If you want a draft of a letter that you can literally insert, you know, dear so-and-so, leader of so-and-so group that I'm a member of and I contribute so-and-so dollars a year to be a member of, I see that so-and-so, get in touch with me after this podcast on Facebook. I'll have the draft for you. I'll send you one. You can print out 10 versions of it and send it to every group that you're in. Put your voice out there. Say something. I don't think a lot of people do that. They think, you know, there comes that time where you're tired of, oh, call your congressman and tell him to vote, you know, yes or no on such and such bill, and people think it's useless. There is a decided measure of courage required to stand against the groups that you yourself affiliate yourself with. It's one thing to repudiate, you know, I don't know, Planned Parenthood. Yes, you're in good company there. You won't make any enemies doing that in your homeschool group, your pro-life group. Yes, it's easy to repudiate the government schools. Everyone knows they're terrible. It takes a lot of courage and a conviction that is very deep to be able to write that letter to the guy sitting six pews away at church or to the guy that, you know, you meet with once a month at homeschool meetup or whatever. It takes a level of conviction that most people aren't willing to act on, and I honestly believe a simple act of writing an email like this or a letter like this and putting it in the mailbox is a required step, a mental break, that most folks say in their heads, yeah, something's wrong, but they're not willing to make it. And I think that's important. I think people need to say, you know what, I need to draw a line here. My children need to see me draw a line. My son, who I want to be a man, needs to see me draw a line. And that's one thing. That would probably be the first step. The second step would obviously be to avoid these groups. And I know I've made this list before, and I'll probably make it again, but some of these groups we've mentioned are completely sold out, and not just the curriculum companies, but there are buzzwords in the homeschooling world. Avoid these groups. Anybody that has the word vision, generations, family, foundation, forum, heritage, stronghold, wisdom, truth, anything like that. Avoid those people. They're selling you something, and you don't have any results from anything they're selling to justify the money. Or, more importantly, aside from the money, we don't have anything to prove that they actually deliver the results we need, and we need them desperately. Avoid anything that has the title written in Latin, anything by a guy whose name is Junior, anything by anybody who's been saying the same thing to the same audience for 10 years. If you've been on the speaking circuit and you convinced my mother to homeschool, I will die before I sit and listen to you convince me to homeschool. You have obviously missed the point, or something is terribly wrong. Anybody who has spent any time on Capitol Hill, anybody who's a mover and a shaker in any political realm whatsoever, and has been there for any measure of time, and you don't know from 10 miles away that he is loathed and hated by the people on the Hill with him. If he's not loathed and hated, and he's been there more than 6 weeks, have nothing to do with him. And also, you want to avoid any homeschooling mom that has any to do, wants to look like, or put herself out there as a Sarah Palin. We don't need any of those women. There are plenty of them in their little business suits as they strut around the homeschool convention in their 1-inch heels, because that's modest, and 2 inches would be too much. Like, those women need to go home, and they don't need to lead any of the rest of us anywhere. They don't need to publish any more books for the rest of us. We have a real battle to fight. It has nothing to do with these types of women. So I think those would be my two biggest suggestions. Is to, first of all, you know, cut a clear line with what you're not. And secondly, stop listening to the people that are turning out a product you don't want your family to be. Kind of tying off my first point there.
Sorry to the Sarah Palin fans out there. Sorry.
Are there any left? Oh, my word.
Where in the world would we be right now if we had Sarah Palin and John McCain?
I think Sarah Palin's probably the last Sarah Palin fan. Poor thing. Her husband surely can't be, for pity's sake. Anyway. I think the third point I would make is you need to actually, I mentioned making that mental break in your head, and that's important. Mailing a letter is important. That's great. That's step one. Step two is removing your family from their influence. Step three is you want your son to be a man, and you want your daughter to know how to support that kind of a man. So you need to actually, like, be one and attack these groups like a man. Attack them with everything you have, which might be nothing. You might have no time. You might have no money. You might be able to punish them, not at all, but attack them anyway. It shows your children that something's worth fighting for. And people always say, you know, why would I, you know, make the perfect the enemy be good? Tell you what, attack them anyway. These people have never been challenged. They've never been called to account. They've never been done anything but worship. They walk into homeschool rooms, and I have literally seen women drop armloads of books when some of these personalities walk in the room, like, oh, just in awe of the celebrity of the whole thing. They've never heard anything but, oh, praise the Lord for your leadership, brother. You live, you know, changed my family. God bless you. They've never been attacked by anyone. And if they do get attacked, and this is very sneaky of them, but very clever, if they do get attacked by anyone way out there on the left, you know, oh, he's too pro-life. He wants women to be, you know, back in the Stone Age. He wants women to just be, you know, have nothing but babies. That's a fundraising opportunity. And I cannot tell you, they praise God for those things. They love to be attacked from the left. They absolutely love when somebody accuses them of something that anybody in their immediate circle would be proud of them for being attacked for. Absolutely accuse me of wanting my wife to submit. I happen to raise money from people that like submissive women, so attack me for it, please. And I'll fundraise on this for months. No, they never get attacked from the inside. They've circumvented, they've sold out our movement from the inside, but they never get attacked from the inside. Attack them. Send them a letter. Write them personally in their group. Post it on Facebook. Post it in your homeschooling Facebook group. Tell everybody you know. Send an email out to your church. When everybody is talking about it, everybody might be only 10 people, but I guarantee you 10 more is more than they've ever had call and complain ever. That's how it works with evangelical leaders. They're glorified weather vanes. They'll blow any way the money does. And if they get 10 people calling and complaining in 1 month, that is probably 10 more than they've had in the last year. People inside my own movement are not buying it anymore. Oh, I better change the message. I better change the direction. I better get in alignment with where the money's going. They've never been attacked, and it really does encourage the person doing the attacking. It really does solidify once again in your mind, why are we doing this? I think the last step, and I'm really so sorry, Kristen, I haven't let you talk much, but I tend to rant. I'm pretty passionate about these things. The last thing I would say is that we do need to replace them in our states, in our counties. I am not a big fan of a federal solution to any of these problems. I don't think it's required or helpful. I do think, though, that if you want to attack them, people are immediately going to say, well, who's going to lead us? And this is what's coming next time, proactive homeschooling education. We need to make anti-pietist families. The real enemies to homeschooling, as I pointed out, are from within. I mean, the threats to homeschooling are from within. But the reason homeschooling came about the reason we all care about this stuff is because the real enemies are still out there. They're not being engaged. They're not being defeated. They don't even worry about us because we're so busy over here getting sold out by our own people that we're no threat to anybody. And that's, I mean, yes, there's a threat from the inside with these effeminate teas and this Doug Phillips culture and military idolization and Negro worship. Oh, that's a problem. They're symptoms of our own leaders selling us out, our own curriculum companies not, you know, believing in homeschooling as a biblical mandate. But it would really fit their agenda if we all just sat here and, oh, no, what are we going to do? Homeschooling's a wash. All these companies are a wash. All the people leaving us are a wash. I sent them a letter. It didn't do any good. They didn't change anything. There are still enemies to be fought, enemies that need and people that need to see us fighting them. I mean, they need – we need to replace them on a local level. We need to say, you know what? I wanted a son that was able to, you know, stand against the county board of supervisors the night they tried to raise the budget, the night they tried to give all the government employees in our county a raise, the night that they tried to run a 2% tax through, the night that they tried – I needed a son who knew what to do when – you know, the government school board was trying to vote on something, you know, ridiculously tyrannical, appropriating funds for something locally. We need to go be that person. Figure out how to do that. These are the real enemies. So attack the homeschoolers and the homeschooling movement that in the areas that it needs it. You know, cut away the dead flesh. Pull together the people around you that think like you. And we have to engage the people around us. We have to apply God's law to the culture. When people see us doing that, they will come to us and they will say, how does this work? How does this work? I've never seen tactics like this. I've never seen anyone afraid of, I've never seen somebody walk into a government school and watch the government school employees cower when they walk in the door. A homeschooling dad making a government school employee cower? How do you do that? We need to be that person. We need to, that'll be the next podcast. But I think people have such a you know, easily discouraged, and that's understandable, but we need to be a different type of homeschooler now. We're past resting on these other groups and leaders and curricula to be the solution. It's really up to us now.
Wow. Such weighty matters. Good stuff. And by the way, I love your rants, so don't apologize.
That's all my thoughts do is like little 5-minute rants at a time. And sometimes, you know, nobody hears it but my empty car or my empty house. But
rant away. This show is about the guests, so don't mind going on rants. Well, thank you so much again for this show, and we're going to have to get you back on for this part 3, which should be another barn burner. Any last comments before we close up?
No, I'm happy to answer questions, though, if there are any. Or again, I think I mentioned I am on Facebook. Feel free to add me if you have questions about a specific curriculum, questions about a specific group, a specific state, their laws, their homeschooling group, anything. Feel free. Anybody get in touch with me anytime. This is what I do. I can tell you the homeschooling laws and details of all 50 states right now, and I'm happy to help anybody that is looking for a way to start out on the right foot or to, you know, not get suckered in by, you know, oh no, I'm using K-12. What do I do now? I can help. That's what I do.
That's a good offer. And seriously, listeners, take her up on that. Facebook.com/BobbyLee.Swagger. Just do a search for Bobby Lee Swagger on Facebook, and I'll put the link to that Facebook profile on the post that hosts this podcast, which will be up soon. And ask her questions. She's been in the homeschooling business, as it were, for several years, and she is the person who can answer these questions. And myself, I have a lot of questions as we learn, and I'll be emailing you as well, Bobby.
No trouble.
April 6th, Justin Cottrell comes on to discuss the Oklahoma City bombing as a perspective from a fireman. So tune in. We'll see you next time.